Visiting today with Gina Nelson, running for state superintendent, and I told her before that I had asked my Facebook friends questions, and so she's willing to sit down with us and answer those today. So we just appreciate you being here with us. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. Well, let's get started. So we've asked some folks some questions, and one of the questions is, what is Gina's plan to address the Oklahoma teacher shortage? We have thousands of teachers who are certified but leaving the profession due to lack of support or low salary.
Well, absolutely. And I will tell you, that's the reason that I got into this race to begin with, because I saw so many of my colleagues leaving. And by January, I had written over 30 recommendation letters for teachers to leave. So this is something that's very important to me. So I have it divided up in different sections, and I could spend all day talking to you about plans, but I'll just kind of hit some high points for you. So obviously we have to address the teacher pay. We have to make sure that our professionals are paid a professional wage. And then we also need to make sure that we are toning down the rhetoric when it comes to public education. Our educators deserve to be celebrated and elevated. And, you know, having one of their own as state superintendent is going to help with that morale issue as well. And also they'll have kind of a built-in cheerleader as someone who believes that public education is saving lives every single day because, well, according, you know, to many, many stories, and of course the stories of my own life, it saved mine. The next part is to make sure that we have programs in place to help our teachers for the first year to 5 years, because as I have spent a lot of time as the state teacher of the year talking to interns across the state, I then follow up and ask them, what are the things that you need now that you're in the classroom and you see? And they need more trauma-informed practices because we have some of the highest ACE scores in the nation, and they want more training with that. In addition to that, at the State Department level, we can actually take our standards and then make a website where our 1 through 5 or even our veteran teachers who need a little more brush up, we can then put in curriculum and lesson plans and attach them to the standards so that we can take one more thing off of their plate, and then they can adjust those lessons and just keep themselves going, because when you're a first-year teacher, you're kind of paddling a lot.
Sure.
And so you need all of the support you can get as you're learning the school culture. Another thing that we can do is in January, we can send out a school culture survey to every teacher in the entire state to find out what are the issues. And if we see at a particular school that we have a lot of teachers who might be considering leaving, we can bring the school culture team that is already developed at the State Department level to help those administrators and districts, you know, maintain and sustain those teachers in the building so that our kids are not going to be out without a great instructor. And I just think that offering that opportunity for educators to be listened to is very important.
Absolutely.
So there are just a few things, but and there's much, much more.
How is she going to address low-performing schools and school districts?
So absolutely. So one of the jobs that I have had in my career is a student support coordinator. And what that does is it actually takes the data that we see when we do multi-tiered systems of support or RTI data, and we figure out, is the child performing low because of reading scores, or is it behavior, or both? And so what I did was I implemented a plan that addressed reading scores. We worked on everything from reading and fluency comprehension for 2 days a week. Then the other 2 days were more comprehensive on looking at the other subject areas. And then the last part of that is incorporating life skills. And so I was showing the kids the practical application of all of the subject matter that they were learning. And so we can actually replicate this and give our kids opportunities to have more hands-on learning, more practical applications of the curriculum so that they can see how it affects them. But it also is going to help our educators fill in those gaps that we desperately need to fill in right now.
Okay. All right. Do you feel that you have the admin and policy experience to run a large state agency?
Absolutely. So in addition to being a 17-year educator, as the state superintendent, obviously you're going to have to deal with a lot of policy. Well, as when I was the state teacher of the year, I served on committees at the state and the national level that dealt with teacher retention, career readiness, also food insecurity with children, We also had committees that I served on that dealt with mental health. I worked with members of Congress. I've worked with our state legislators. And I've also worked in the corporate world. So outside of education, I've worked in corporate world. I have run my own small business. I've even sold real estate. So so absolutely, I think that, you know, my experience is very diverse. And also it's going to be great to kind of move the State Department in a forward direction with new ideas that I've gained, of course, across the country working with my national organization of National State Teachers of the Year.
Okay. Do you think that schools should be required to inform parents of any medical, psychological, healthcare issues or discussions that occur with their children?
Well, I think that that's very important because, you know, obviously if they're working with your child, you definitely want to be in on that conversation.
Sure.
You know, I feel that, you know, as a mom myself, that if anyone is going to be talking about, you know, anything to my child about mental health, I definitely want to know. Obviously, if there's some sort of danger, there are other agencies that have to be involved. But one of the things that I really believe in is, as an educator, is that parents are our partners. I want to make sure that we have those great relationships with our families because it just really enhances the students' learning environment. It helps us understand, you know, how to best help students as well. And as a mom, I definitely want that communication.
Absolutely. Do you agree with and support House Bill 1775?
I do not support 1775. I believe that it is very vague. I also think that it has been weaponized against many of our districts and teachers, and I honestly believe that it was a solution looking for a problem. I know that our educators are professional in this state, and I know this from going everywhere and around and talking to them and seeing the amazing things that they're doing every single day. I also know that, you know, we as Oklahomans have been through a lot, and it's important to know about these experiences and work with the, you know, the great many people that we have in our state and understand our history and how it connects us all together and how it moves us forward as a state.
Absolutely. What is your stance on EPIC, vouchers, homeschool, and private schools?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of things to unpack there.
So, yeah. Yes.
So first of all, I want to talk about EPIC and the fact that, you know, EPIC as a school provides, you know, opportunities for kids who need that virtual learning. But we need to separate that from the organization that was running it at the time. So obviously there was a lot of corruption, and yes, they need to be paying that money back. And so for me, understanding that the teachers that are providing services from students, I can separate that from the organization that was causing so many issues. Mm-hmm. Homeschooling, you know, is also important to many people that need that, you know, diverse set of rules that works for their children.
And for people that have a lot of patience,
yeah.
Right? A lot of patience there.
Absolutely, absolutely. But my whole thing is, and since we're kind of talking about all of these, is that, but if they are receiving public funds, I believe that public funds should stay in our public schools. And if you are receiving public funds, then you should be held to the same standards as our public schools. So I think that might be the question that's going there. But if not, I'd be glad to expand on that.
Okay. Well, define a book ban, and do you feel that books are actually being banned?
Well, I feel that our – oh, goodness, a book ban. You know, my whole thing is that, you know, I trust our districts and our educators, and I trust them to have policies that if there is a book that a parent is concerned about, that we bring it, of course, to the attention of our administrators, and then the administrators obviously would then bring it to the state, you know, not state school board, but their local school boards, and if something needs to be moved up the chain, it should. I believe that it's important to take a breath on this because right now, I feel like there are so many people being tried in the court of Twitter and Facebook law, and
sure,
we really need to remember that our librarians and our professionals, and really trying to make sure that we have developmentally appropriate books. I believe that that's what we need to make sure we have, are developmentally appropriate books. And then just also having those conversations and remembering that parents are our partners once again.
Absolutely. So talk a little bit about your plans for like rural schools and what you would like to see, how you would like to see those advance.
Absolutely. So that's near and dear to my heart. I originally grew up in Broken Bow, and I went through a K-8 school in Luke Vada Elementary Schools. Mm-hmm. And so it's just very important that they have fully funded schools, that they have access to broadband, and it's just as many resources as our urban and suburban schools in Oklahoma. They also need to be connected, I like to think forward connected into the future, where they have career tech opportunities, they have college opportunities, because really and truly, your zip code should not determine the type of, you know, education that you should receive in Oklahoma. And our rural communities are very, very important to the economy of our state. And so we need to support them as much as we support our urban and suburban schools.
Talk a little bit about what you feel like the value FFA and 4-H and agricultural programs can bring.
Oh, my goodness. So this is near and dear to my heart. So all of my nieces and nephews are part of FFA and 4-H. And so I've gotten a front row seat. And, of course, growing up in Broken Bow, we know the importance of agriculture because, well, you know, let's just keep it down to bare bones. If there's not ag, then we don't eat. And I do love to eat. So and so, you know, it's so important to our economy here in Oklahoma. And I would love to see agriculture actually expand into all of the school systems across Oklahoma. It doesn't matter if you're an urban school. I would love to see aquaponics and hydroponics, more conservation when we talk about soil and water, because it's just so important to our state. And I really feel that all of those classes, science and math, can have more practical application if we apply it to, of course, our agriculture classes. And so I would love to see that expanded in Oklahoma schools.
Well, these are kind of around just some different kind of things that folks have asked. How do you feel about requiring cameras in classrooms similar to policy body cams? I think more of a protection question for the kids.
Well, sure. I would say we can't put cameras in classrooms because it would violate our FERPA laws, right to privacy laws. And there are so many issues that I could see that would pop up with having a camera in the classroom. I will say that as someone who's taught middle school and high school their entire career, trust me, if anything happens, there's a camera available at some point where kids would know what is going on and parents will know what's going on as well. But there are so many issues when we deal with kids that, you know, might be in the foster system or, you know, have already signed waivers saying that they don't want pictures or film. And we need to really, you know, honor the rights of the parents who have that, and just make sure that our kids are taken care of.
Going back to 2020, lots of schools locked down. Is it your opinion that that was the right thing to do, or do you feel like the students are kind of still behind and we're trying to still play catch up from that?
Sure. So I think that we really should have focused on local control. Because, you know, what was right for a big school maybe that had 1,100 kids and it's very small spaces and didn't have, you know, the correct PPE, maybe is not the right answer for, you know, the smaller districts that could spread out. And so I really wish that we could have had more common sense conversations about what was right for each district. And as far as behind, I would say that, you know, we know that there are gaps, but there were gaps before the pandemic hit. But what we saw is what we're seeing now is that, you know, kids lashing out because of behavior issues, the social development that happens. And of course, you know, just the trauma of not the pandemic coupled with the fact that our kids had so many issues with trauma before, just means that we need to actually take and look and at the programs and how can we develop programs that are going to help our kids moving forward as well. You know, no one could have predicted what would have happened during that pandemic.
Sure.
And I saw educators doing just amazing things for kids and families and trying to do the very best that they could in a situation that none of us really knew much about. But I think that always thinking of the safety of our children is very important, you know, as a mom, as a teacher, and as someone who loves their state and community. And I think that we've learned a lot of lessons, and hopefully we can remember those lessons for the future.
Okay. How do you feel about streamlining teacher certifications to those outside the traditional route?
I think that we need to make sure that anyone who steps foot into our classrooms are prepared. And I even think that some of our more traditional, you know, teachers that have gone through the programs, that we need to even look at, you know, maybe changing how we teach them and get them prepared for educating as well. But I also think that there's great value in those who come from the community with certain skills, as long as they are prepared to know about, you know, the pedagogy and classroom management and trauma-informed practices, that there can be a happy medium in between. But we need to make sure that whoever is in front of our kids are prepared to do the most important job that we have on the planet, which is educating our children.
Will you audit administrative spending, and how do you plan to do that?
Well, absolutely. And I will say that our schools are audited constantly. And I think that that's something that's really not well known or maybe even publicized, but they are constantly being audited. Obviously, what we saw in some of the scandals that we've seen in the past, that we obviously need to make sure that we are watching those even more closely. But yes, I'm a person that believes that you got to know where your money is going, and I want to make sure that it's spent in the best way, which is helping our kids and helping our educators.
What is your stance on critical race theory?
Well, I will say critical race theory has not been taught in K through 12 in Oklahoma public schools. It is an elective that you can take if you are in law school, if you choose to take it. So I will be real honest. When the first time I heard about it was when I was state teacher of the year, and a reporter asked me about it, and I felt real ignorant because I was like, I don't even know what this is. I apologize for not being very smart about it. And they explained it to me, and I said, well, we've never taught that. And that's something that I wish that we could just say over and over again, because I think it is something that's being weaponized to cause fear in our families, that that kids are learning about critical race theory when it is not being taught.
Okay. Do you think G&T funding should be allowed to go back into the general fund, and how would you keep those funds accountable to G&T programs?
Well, that is a very interesting question right now. That, you know, when we talk about the G&T funding, because it's tied to so many other different things as well, but also making sure that we have the time and the educators and the resources to provide great G&T classes. And so I would love to see a more development on that. But right now, unfortunately, because we have so many teachers leaving, you know, I know that their focus is right now making sure that we have enough teachers in the core areas. And so I think we need to, you know, build up our teacher pipeline and, of course, then, you know, offer classes that differentiate instruction so that, of course, our kids in G&T can have the most amazing instruction and be challenged. But we're also making sure that our kids that are tier one, or tier two, and tier three also are getting great instruction as well.
What is your stance on school choice?
Well, the great thing about Oklahoma is that we have open transfer laws. Mm-hmm. And so anyone can go to any school that they feel fits them, as long as they can provide transportation for their child. And so when I hear people ask me about school choice, my follow-up question is, well, what does that mean to you? Because I, as you know, I'm a parent, and so I know that if a school has space for my child, I can transfer them mm-hmm. there as long as I provide the transportation there for them.
Right. What do you feel like you're going to be, like, is your number one priority when you get into office, when and if you get into office?
Okay, so I have three things that I'm going to hit the ground running with. Obviously, we have to address teacher flight. Mm-hmm. If we don't have our teachers, we're not going to have our schools open. our kids aren't going to have the best education they can possibly have. The second thing is we have to address mental health. Our kids are suffering from high ACE scores, and of course, our educators then are taking on the secondary trauma, post-secondary trauma of dealing with those situations day in and day out. And last but not least is we've got to make sure that our schools are fully funded and keeping those public funds in our public schools.
Kind of a follow-up with that, what supports will she provide for the administration teams in the schools and the districts?
So I've already been reaching out to mental health professionals and who want to collaborate and help our schools because they see the issues and they want to actually do a little more prevention before, you know, these kids grow up, become adults, and we have even more issues. So I'm really excited about those kind of collaborations, bringing the public back to the public schools. Mm-hmm. And that's everything with mental health, with career readiness. There are businesses who are ready to help offer internships to our students because they know that I'm a big proponent of career readiness. Our career techs are excited to partner with me as well, and of course, higher ed. And then also, you know, looking at our community and saying, what skills do you have that you can share with our students? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a grandma and if you can teach a life skill like how to wash clothes and how do we change tires and, you know, just really bringing that sense of community back to our schools, I think is so, so important. And it will offer so many supports to our administrators, our educators. In addition to the mental health, and I just left this off and I apologize for jumping around, but also expanding telehealth. And then also there are companies who offer apps to help our teachers access mental health professionals, which on their schedule, which I think would be quite helpful as well, because we want to have healthy teachers, you know, mentally and physically, emotionally, so they can provide the best education possible. Because our teachers' working conditions are our students' learning conditions.
Well, you're kind of speaking to this question right now, but what is your plan for providing support to classroom teachers that are brand new, like just starting off to the profession and accepting positions that are in maybe that high need, low support districts?
Absolutely. So kind of going back to what we talked about before is that obviously linking curriculum and lesson plans that they can access because they're still learning their school culture at that time and learning how to be a teacher and all of the great things that come with being a first-year teacher. Also providing them support from the State Department level with mentors, because I know sometimes school districts will provide them a mentor, but as a teacher who's also, you know, in charge of all of her classes and then taking on mentor first-year teachers, it could be a lot, and they might not get the supports they need. Also making sure that, that of course, they have as many resources when it comes to planning and making sure that we take care of, you know, planning time and linking them with great professional development that's going to help them actually grow and not become just one more thing on their plate.
And then kind of going along with that, what is your plan to address like low performing teachers?
So I think that a lot of it comes from support, mm-hmm. you know, really and truly, because sometimes we get into situations and it may not be the right fit at a school, or, you know, you're just feel like you're paddling in an ocean, maybe mm-hmm. your first year or second year. And obviously working with our school culture teams, going in and assisting administrators and finding out what are this person's strengths and how do we elevate that? And then what are their weaknesses? And then how can we connect them to resources to actually help them become better teachers?
Okay, we're getting close to the end.
You're doing a great job.
How will the SDE hold schools accountable that misappropriate funds?
Well, absolutely. And so, you know, that is something that the state superintendent working with the state school board will have to, you know, analyze all of that data. And then, you know, obviously there are ways of holding them accountable. And so, but having those conversations, making sure that you do a complete analysis and you're giving them due process, you know, and not trying them in the court of Facebook and Twitter law.
Yes, yes.
And just really making sure that we have all of the data before we make those kind of decisions. Because when you make decisions about a district, you're affecting a community and the children and the educators and everyone around there. And so you don't want to be rash about it, but you do want to move in a very swift way to make sure that everyone is held accountable and that that school and that community is getting the services that they need.
Do you support cutting access to Lindsay Nicole Henry scholarship funding? And if you do, how do you plan on ensuring that our most vulnerable students will be educated in a fair and equitable manner?
Well, you know, we don't need to cut, you know, funding to those scholarships because they have been receiving a lot of money over the years. But what we do need to do is make sure that our public schools are getting everything that they need to serve all of their students as well, because they're serving over 700,000 public school students.
Will you put an end to the spending on the DEI in order to focus on academic skill mastery?
That is an excellent question. And so right now we have to make sure that we are focused on, you know, getting all those public dollars into our public schools. And I understand that people are concerned about, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion dollars. But we aren't getting a ton of money for those kind of programs. What we are getting money for are things like Title I and Title II and free and reduced lunch programs. Mm-hmm. And so we have to make sure that those federal dollars, that we accept federal dollars so that we can keep those programs like ag that we were talking mm-hmm. about earlier and special education.
Sure.
Those are the federal dollars that we are concerned with. I think that there is – I don't know where, you know, this comes from, that it's somehow tied to those kind of programs. The federal dollars that we need are the ones that are keeping our schools open. And I'll tell you right now, if we refuse our federal dollars, we will see our schools absolutely close. If you look and see how much money each county receives just in federal funding alone, we have to take care of our public schools and make sure that those funds are used to help protect our most vulnerable students.
Well, I'll end with just letting you kind of, what would you like our audience to just really know about you?
Well, absolutely. So I have the biggest heart for public education. I keep saying that public education saves lives because it saved mine. And for me, running a state superintendent is being able to continue the legacy that my mentor gave me, which is to help others. Help others, help them through public education. And just to remind people that, you know, education is not a Democrat or Republican issue. It's an issue that affects every single one of us. And I want to make sure that every kid in the state of Oklahoma, when they walk through those doors of their schools, that they know that they're loved and they're supported, and that they've got a state superintendent who's going to fight for them to make sure that they have the best public education possible so that they can take care of their communities, and our communities will keep thriving, and then our state will move in a forward direction.
Well, thanks for answering hard questions. We appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely.